ಸದಾಶಿವ ಸಮಾರಂಭಾಂ ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಮಧ್ಯಮಾಂ ಅಸ್ಮದಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಪರ್ಯಂತಾಂ ವಂದೇ ಗುರು ಪರಂಪರಾಂ. ಓಂ ಪರಂ ವರಿಷ್ಠಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಿಷ್ಠಂ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ರೂಪಿಣಂ ಪರಮಾರ್ಥನಂದಯತಿಂ ಸದ್ಗುರುಂ ಪ್ರಣತೋಸ್ಮ್ಯಹಂ. We actually saw that Gita can be looked at three shatkams in the last class as part of the summary and an introduction into the Madhyama Shatkam. I talked about it. And we have the Prathama Shatkam which we just completed. And then we have the Madhyama Shatkam between 7th and 12th chapter. And Charama Shatkam which is 13th to 18th chapter. It, and each of these have three main topics discussed, and that's what we saw in the last class. So let's enter chapter 7. Atha saptamo dhyayah, atha saptamo dhyayah, jnana vijnana yogah, jnana vijnana yogah. So, we saw the first shatkam, we actually saw what are the main contents, and I said we can look at it from three aspects, and as we saw, we had Jiva Swarupam being discussed, Karma Yoga being discussed, and importance of self-effort or Purusha Prayatnam. Basically, I am trying to just summarize in this slide what we discussed for about maybe 20 minutes in the last class, right? Because I did not have a slide at that time. And in the, all of these are very important, but in the second shatkam, we saw that we are going to see Ishvara Swarupam, Upasana Yoga and Ishvara Anugraha. Now, all these are important, but in amidst all of them, Ishvara Swarupam is the most important topic, the nature of God. I hope all of you can hear me. If there's a problem, do let me know. Yeah. So, why is Ishvara Swarupam the most important topic, we say? Because when we study Ishvara Swarupam, we must note a very, very important point, right? Before we get interested in scriptural study, right? When before we even understand what scriptural study is, etc., until a person seriously gets into this, especially, right, we the Hindus have got certain concepts regarding Ishvara or God. And that concept of God is based on various stories we have read and heard. Especially, I'm sure many of you who are listening to me on this webinar have grown up with Aman Chitra Kathas, right? Where stories of all the gods have been presented. Most of the, you know, mythological stories have been presented in Aman Chitra Kathas. And we are in fact thankful that we got exposed to it at least in childhood. Of course, these days again, parents don't even know, are not aware about it, and grandparents are not around to tell those kind of stories, right? At least thanks to these kind of books, we have the Puranic stories. And of course, in the previous generation, we had the Upanyasakas. Now we have a few, but it was very common those days for them to talk about Ramayanam, Bhagavatam. Also, the old movies used to be, like in Tamil, I remember we used to have Thiruvalaiyaadal and Saraswati Sagatam, etc., which were all old movies, God movies, and we also had God-based serials, right? So based on such a religious exposure, we all have formed a concept of God, and it is with that concept that we enter the Bhagavad Gita study. Before, I have say done introduction to Vedanta, or, we have started embarking on Gita, that was the concept of God that is there in all our minds. Definitely, I am sure 99% of us have had this kind of a forming a concept of God, God as a person, right? So, but when we study Gita, Lord Krishna will strongly say, you have to totally revise your concept of God, which will initially disturb some people, but we have to grow out of our popular concept of God, right? So, the first concept of God is what? We have many gods, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Krishna, Rama, Devi. So, this is pluralistic gods, right? The second concept is that all gods are what? Finite beings, right? Having forms, limbs, even complexion, fair, dark, etc. Swamiji jokingly says, now if we see Krishna and he's dark, maybe many girls won't even get married to him because there is a stigma attached to dark complexion or fair complexion. We have so many of these. So actually if you see, those days I don't think there was any kind of stigma attached to any complexion. If you see the gods, we see gods in all kinds of colors, all kinds of forms, etc. But they all have a particular form, right? So all of them not only have form, right? They are more in number and they occupy various lokas somewhere. So all of them come down now and then, give us darshanam. Some of them have conversation, right? They will come, they will go. Right? In Puranas, we also see some gods quarreling between themselves, etc. Right? So this is exactly what we have been exposed to, right? Now they are all very important initially because we will not understand God in the original nature. So Nirvishesha Param Brahma, right? The Sakshat Karvatram, right? You don't feel that, right? We don't see or understand God in the original nature initially because it requires a very fine and subtle mind. So when a child asks, who is God? How can we teach, right? So we naturally have to talk about these stories, right? Exactly like a child learns to start counting by using fingers, right? 1, 2, 3, 11 and 12, they will start even looking for their toes. Or if you give your hand, they'll start counting. Now, all along, they are not doing that. At some point in time, they are graduating from this finger counting, right? Similarly, these stories are important because they represent God and they help us develop devotion. They help us to perform puja, to practice meditation also, we require such a God, right? But we should remember that this is not the ultimate God which the Hindu scriptures want to teach, right? So, firstly and foremost, we don't have many gods at all. We only have representations or many forms representing one God, right? It is very clearly said in Shweta Shatra Upanishad, and I thought it's important to give these references for you because it will also be useful when you are speaking to people who question you about the concept of God. This is what Upanishad says, Shweta Shvatara Upanishad. Almost every Upanishad has a reference, right? Eko devaha sarvabhuteshu gudaha sarvabhyapi sarvabhutantaratma karmadhyakshaha sarvabhutadivasaha sakshi cheta kevalo nirgunascha. Right? So, he says, Bhagavan is one, all pervading, he is the indweller, right? Sarva Bhutantara Atma, Karmadhyakshaha, right? He is also the administrator of the karmas, right? Sarva Vyapi, present everywhere, right? And he is hidden in all the beings and he is also the Sakshi, the witness, pure consciousness, right? We say Achyutaya Namaha, Anantaya Namaha. If God is all pervading, we must also think, how can an all-pervading God have a particular form, right? So that is what Krishna is going to talk about later, right? So Arjuna, don't think that Lord Krishna's body is the real Krishna, right? In fact, in the 9th chapter, we will be seeing, Avajananti maam mudaha manushin tanumashritam param bhavama janantaha mama bhuta maheshwaram. Not knowing my higher nature as the great Lord of all beings, those deluded ones look down upon me who has taken a human form. They don't reject me, the higher God in me, right? Higher nature of me. So a body that has got a date of birth, a date of death, is that mortal body. If you take Krishna, right, then the Bhagavan will become mortal, not immortal, right? So Bhagavan will become mortal. Therefore, Arjuna, use the shariram for puja, but you have to transcend the form, transcend plurality. So that is the transformation. Ishwaraha ekaha, Ishwaraha sarvagataha. So if Bhagavan is all pervading, in which higher loka will he be, right? Because the all pervading God has to be everywhere, right? So he cannot be all pervading God seated beyond heaven, right? So it will not work at all, right? So Gita is meant for thinking people, right? Now all the Puranic stories are for beginners, right? We need not criticize these stories. These stories are very useful. We will teach our children, and not only that, we will use the form of puja, right? We will celebrate Krishnashtami, Janmashtami, where we will make all the special Yamuruku and Shire and everything and give us Nivedyam, because we develop a ritual, a puja around it, and we create an attachment for the child towards that God, right? So Lord Krishna wants to take us through the next journey, right? That journey, and therefore the God journey is this, moving from the pluralistic God to Eko Devaha, right? Therefore, Madhyama Shatkam of the Gita is the most important part of the Gita for revising our concept of God. And we must remember that Gita is almost the first text that a person embarking on a spiritual journey is formally studied. So this is the first time the exposure happens and the change in the view of God starts happening. It does take very long number of years for this to happen, right? So imagining that God as a person will come one day, right, and go, etc., we have to change, right? So we should learn to discern the all-pervading Ishvara by studying the Madhyama Shatkam, and revising the concept of God is very, very important. Otherwise, what happens is atheists and rationalists will mock our religion and our temple worship, idol worship, everything, right? What is an idol worship after all? Right? It's just an alingana. We are able to invoke the God in anything, whether it is a stone, whether it is turmeric, right, whether it is shalagramam, anything, right? So our own children can start asking questions. If we do not know to answer them in the appropriate way, right, then we have a problem, right? So they are all, the concepts that children are exposed to have to be slowly replaced, right? So for this, I have to understand who is God, what is God, which is a very, very important topic and also extremely abstract, right? So when we try to understand carefully, one very important warning, right, is we don't and we must not give up any of our religious practice. We continue to worship deities, we continue to go to temples, right, daily deeparadhana, daily puja, everything we will do, right? But parallelly, we have to grow emotionally and intellectually. So we will see a lot. From Sakama Bhakti, we go to Nishkama Bhakti. We don't ask for anything for our family, our possessions, etc., or our profession. But we ask for Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. So spiritual growth requires emotional and rational growth also. So with this background, we will enter the seventh chapter. There are a lot of concepts we have to get clear. So as we move along, I think we will spend a little more concept in seventh chapter, little more time in the concept, and we will proceed. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Maya Sattamana Partha, Maya Sattamana Partha, Yogam Yunjanna Dashayah, Yogam Yunjanna Dashayah, Asamshayam Samagramam, Asamshayam Samagramam, Yathajnyasyati Tachrimu, Yathajnyasyati Tachrimu. So, here Bhagavan is talking about the spiritual seeker, who is Maya Sattamanaha, right? Each of these three words will be discussed elaborately later, but this is the spiritual seeker who is devoted to the Lord. When Lord Krishna uses the word Mai in me, he is not referring to Krishna as a finite personal God, but the real and original God, right, which we will discuss, right? Asakta Manaha means with total devotion and commitment to me, right? Later Lord Krishna will point out that a person can be devoted to the Lord for the sake of worldly accomplishments also, right? But this is the higher me. So during the worship of the Lord for the sake of worldly successes, family, benefits, etc., Bhagavan is used only as a means to attain what? Worldly goals. So this is one type of bhakti which is called materialistic bhakti, right? Or sakama bhakti. And Lord Krishna will describe another type of bhakti where we pray to the Lord and the Lord asks me, what is your goal? Then, as when you want to fulfill, the bhakta says, not only you are the means, but you yourself are the end as well. So, a bhakta who has understood that all other goals in life are fleeting and perishable, anitya sadhyam only, right? And even if I have to accomplish them, I will lose them one day, right? So, a bhakta who wants a goal which is unlosable, right? So, goals are two types, losable and unlosable. So, Lord Krishna is going to point out that a lower bhakta seeks losable goals because he is not his mudaha. Basically, he is saying he is a foolish person. Whereas, the higher intelligent bhakta seeks the unlosable goal, which is the Lord himself, which is otherwise called moksha, right? Lord in the higher nature. Therefore, the word Maya Sattamanaha refers to a superior bhakta who sees Bhagavan or moksha itself as the primary target of life. We will call him later Ananya Bhaktaha, we'll call him Avyavicharini Bhaktaha, we'll call him Nishkama Bhaktaha, Jignyasu Bhaktaha, Mumukshu Bhaktaha. All of these are synonyms, right? So many wonderful words, terms Lord Krishna uses, right? In short, a bhakta who wants moksha or Bhagavan, right? He does not merely pray to God, because mere prayer will not accomplish anything, right? So Bhagavan will only help us, right? He will provide everything, right? Bhagavan does not expect us to just use merely for prayer, right? In Hinduism, prayer means devotedly doing what is to be done. Therefore, he seeks moksha and he does the relevant sadhana also. We know the sadhana, which is Panchamaha Yajna. This is indicated as Yogam Yunjan. So, in the first level, Karma Yoga. In the next level, Upasana Yoga. And in the next level, Jnana Yoga. So, in the 12th chapter, Lord Krishna talks about the series of sadhanas to be practiced, and this seeker is willing to go through these stages. Therefore, Yogam Yunjan, indicating taking responsibility for our future. Madashrayaha, and the seeker knows that there are many obstacles on the road, right? And we have to cross all of them. The obstacles can be in the form of our own past karma, And since I don't know what all obstacles are there, I should seek the grace of the Lord to get rid of the obstacles. Therefore, Madashrayaha. Right? That's why in the Gita Dhyana Shloka, we have this wonderful shloka. Bhishmadrona Tata, it goes that way. And you will see Kaivartaka Keshava. Right? You might, I did this in the Dhyana Shloka session. Lord Krishna is a boatman, as it were here. He's being imagined as a boatman. And we require a boatman to cross the river of samsara. Therefore, I should be humble enough to seek the grace of Lord, which is called Ishvara Sharanagati. Prapanna Parijataya, also we saw that. Prapanna means one who has surrendered. Therefore, the seeker is a humble bhakta of the Lord. And when a person fulfills these three conditions, humble enough to surrender to the Lord, responsible enough to go through all the required sadhanas, and very clear about his goal, the ultimate goal of moksha or Bhagavan. So such a person who fulfills these conditions will be definitely successful. Arjuna, I shall promise. Therefore he says, asamshayam mam nyasyasi. Asamshayam means doubtlessly, definitely, 100% with my support, that person will know me. Right? And later Lord Krishna will point out, knowing the Lord itself will be reaching the Lord. Right? And initially I think Lord is seated in one loka, higher above. Lord is in Vaikuntha or in Kailasha, and I am in Blue Loka. Right? Then not only knowledge is enough, I have to travel and travel and travel to reach Lord, right? If Lord is a finite, remote entity, knowing and reaching will involve separate effort. But when I know the Lord in his real nature, I understand Bhagavan is all-pervading. So what will be the distance between me and the all-pervading Bhagavan? Nothing, right? So knowing itself is merging. Therefore, asamshayam, doubtlessly, mam nyasyasi, he will know and attain me. What type of me? Samagram, means in my totality. So he will know me in my total nature and he will reach me. And why does Lord Krishna say he will know me in my total nature? Because Lord Krishna is going to talk about Bhagavan having two natures. One is sagunam and other is nirgunam. Sagunam means a Lord endowed with various attributes, glories, right? Nirgunam means that which does not have form, color, smell, etc. Right? Now, exactly like Akasha, which is all-pervading space, which has no form, etc. So, similarly, Bhagavan also has a saguna nature and a nirguna nature, which is the higher nature. Knowing the Lord is complete only when we know both the natures of the Lord, right? So, therefore, Lord Krishna says, samagram means saguna nirgunatmakam both mam nyasyasi, right? Of which one should we initially know? Saguna swarupam alone. And we should know because nirguna swarupam is abstract and the mind should be highly subtle and sensitive to grasp the formless God. Therefore, we start with the form God and then we move to the formless one. So, Lord Krishna says, Tachrino, that is what I am going to be discussing in the next 6 chapters very elaborately. Right? Be patient and study systematically, everything will be crystal clear. Right? Like if you want to do MSc chemistry or something, you have to start slowly from, you know, primary school, then your secondary school, then your graduation. It takes years of studies, right? So, for a length of time, we need to go through the Vedic scriptures under the guidance of a acharya or a guru. Right? Both are, you know, therefore Arjuna, I shall reveal that acharya is important, shastra is important. I will reveal that teaching to you in the next few chapters, right? That is what Krishna is saying. So the Lord said, taking refuge in me and practicing yoga with a mind which is totally absorbed in me, how you will come to know me completely and doubtlessly. May you listen to this, O Arjuna. Me represents the higher nature.
Jnanam teham savijnanam, jnanam teham savijnanam. ಇದಂ ವಕ್ಷ್ಯಾಮ್ಯ ಶೇಷತಃ ಇದಂ ವಕ್ಷ್ಯಾಮ್ಯ ಶೇಷತಃ ಯಜ್ಞಾತ್ವಾನೇಹ ಭೂಯೋನ್ಯತ ಯಜ್ಞಾತ್ವಾನೇಹ ಭೂಯೋನ್ಯತ ಜ್ಞಾತವ್ಯಮವಶಿಷ್ಯತೆ ಜ್ಞಾತವ್ಯಮವಶಿಷ್ಯತೆ.
I shall give you this complete knowledge of both the lower and higher Ishvara, completely without leaving anything. Asheshataha means completely, right? I shall impart you this teaching which consists of jnanam as well as vijnanam. Do you remember jnanam and vijnanam? We elaborately discussed this in the third chapter as well as in the sixth chapter. In the third chapter, in verse number 41, ತಸ್ಮಾಂದ್ರಿಯಾದೌ ನಿಯಮ್ಯ ಭರತರ್ಷದ ಪಾಪ್ಮಾನ ಪ್ರಜಹಿಧ್ಯೇನ ಜ್ಞಾನ ವಿಜ್ಞಾನ ನಾಶನ. ವಿ ಸಾ ದಿಸ್ ಅಗೇನ್ ಇನ್ ಸಿಕ್ಸ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಏಟ್ ವರ್ಸ್. ವಿ ಸಾ ಜ್ಞಾನ ವಿಜ್ಞಾನ ತೃಪ್ತಾತ್ಮ ಕೂಟಸ್ಥೋ ವಿಜಿತೇಂದ್ರಿಯ ಯುಕ್ತಿತ್ಯುಚ್ಯತೆ ಯೋಗಿ ಸಮಲೋಷ್ಟಾಶ್ಮ ಕಾಂಚನ. ಸೊ ಜ್ಞಾನ ವಿಜ್ಞಾನ ತೃಪ್ತಾತ್ಮ, ರೈಟ್? ಸೊ let's quickly recollect the contextual meaning here. Initially, when I know Ishvara, Ishvara is understood as the Karanam, the creator. I look at myself as the created living being. Created product is called what? Karyam. Okay? And the creator, Bhagavan, is my master and I am a Dasaha. Right? Slave. Dasaha. Therefore, the relationship is creator, created. Master, servant. Swami Dasaha. That's why people have this name also, like Ramadasa, Krishnadasa, Shivadasa, etc. So this is called Dasoham Bhavana. Dasoham Bhavana, right? Dasa Aham Bhavana. Bhagavan is the master and I am a Dasa. At the initial level of Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga, and later at the Jnana Yoga, when one learns the essential nature of both Ishvara and Jiva, he understands essentially both are one and the same. Sachidananda Atma only, and therefore he removes the first letter from Dasoham. So you remove the first letter from Dasoham, what happens? You get Soham Bhavana, right? So Dasoham to Soham Bhavana, from Dvaitam to Advaitam, from Dasoham to Soham, from Karya, Karanam to Karya Karana Atitam. A very tough and long journey, right? If you ask how it is possible, right? You remember the ocean and wave example where the wave can say, I am a wave, right? And look at it as very small, right? And superficially it can say, I am a small wave, right? And other day I was born, I am aging now and I am soon going to die, right? Ocean is immortal. I the wave and mortal, right? Ocean is big, I am small, right? I am powerless and therefore, O Lord Ocean, you have to bless me. I am your Dasa, right? That is Dasoham Bhavana, right? Wave went through, say, Karma Upasana Yoga and Jnana Yoga and came to a Guru wave. So the enlightened Guru wave as says, right? Obviously, you have to surrender like in chapter 2, Shishyasteham Shadimam Tvam Prapannam. Like Arjuna told Krishna and requested him to accept him as a Shishya. So then the Guru wave said, deep, looked at the wave, right, small wave, and said, okay, I will teach you the fundamental truth. Wave is nothing but water plus a temporary Nama Rupa. Essence is nothing but wave, nothing but water with a temporary Nama Rupa called wave, right? There is no wave other than water, right? This is the Pratama Shakam. Wave Sarupam has been taught, right? Then another six chapters discussing the nature of ocean. Then the Guru wave says, after analyzing the true nature of the ocean, you are essentially water plus Namarupa ocean, right? In fact, there is no ocean other than you, the water. Ocean is also an ocean and wave is also an ocean. Essentially, both are only water. So superficially, they are different. Essentially, that is from asi. When Guru Ves taught this, this newly enlightened Shishyave looked up at the ocean again, forgetting the Nama and Rupa, and the latest declaration is, right, I am not Dasoham, but I am Soham, right? You are also water, I am also water, right? The difference is only in the superficial Nama Rupa. Now, why this example I gave? When the knowledge is Soham, it is Vijnanam. When the knowledge is Dasoham, it is Jnanam, right? Therefore, I will teach you both gradually, and the starting point should obviously be Dasoham to Soham, right? Always the journey starts with Dasoham. So, ultimately we go through our scriptures and then we come to this. Now, the scriptures also say if you are not comfortable, right, you can continue with your religious activities, many janmas you can take. Finally, you can come. There is no hurry, right? So, Soham, Dasoham to Snoham. So, Soham. So, Lord Krishna says, Idam sa vijnanam jnatam, jnanam. So, I shall teach you, yat jnatva, after knowing Ishvara completely, anyat jnatavyam na avashishyate. You will have nothing else to know, right? In Mundaka Upanishad, it is actually called Eka Vijnanena Sarva Vijnanam. Ishvara Jnanena Sarva Jnanam. Actually, as a beginner, when you read this in Mundaka Upanishad, you don't understand and relate. But when it goes together with Gita, then you start relating, right? Eka Vijnanena Sarva Vijnanam, right? So, if you know Ishvara well, you don't have anything else to know, right? Anyat jnatavyam na avashishyate, right? So, all these are introduction to turn the attention of Arjuna, right? So, next shloka is also part of the introduction, right? So, we will go to verse 3. Manushyanam sahasreshu, manushyanam sahasreshu, kashchidyattati siddhaye, kashchidyattati siddhaye, yatatamapi siddhanam, yatatamapi siddhanam, kashchimamveti tatvatah, kashchimamveti tatvatah. Here, Lord Krishna is admiring Arjuna and Arjuna type of student who seeks God as the primary goal. Those people who choose God as the primary goal are intelligent and superior because that goal alone is unusable goal. Because God alone is infinite, and other than God, any other goal that you fix on, whether it is money, whether it is fame, relationships, house, all of them will be lost, right? Therefore, it is not intelligent to choose a losable goal. But unfortunately, all the losable ephemeral goals are extremely attractive. Maya is indeed great, right? Maya keeps us really busy. As Shankaracharya actually says, balasthavata sida sattaha, it goes that way, and it says, parame brahmani kopina sattaha, because right through your childhood, your middle age, childhood you are interested in playing, middle age, with, you know, the opposite sex and getting married, etc. Then, you know, in old age you are only worried about something or the other. Parame brahmani kopina sattaha. Maya being is to keep us busy in worldly pursuits, not giving us time for that the important or the most important goal in life, right? That is the job of magical Maya, right? And even the Upanishads say, Pariksha Lokan Karma Chitan, they keep accomplishing many things and they lose, right? Anything, whether it is chess championship, whether it is a cricket match, anything, an award, right? All of them are not Nityaha, right? So, that we learnt in Tattva Bodha also, right? Nitya, Nitya, Vastu, Vivekaha. Vivekaha is one of the sadhana chatushtayams, right? Nitya, 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 Anistya, Vastu, Vivekaha, right? Now, we learn, therefore, some people learn the lesson quickly and decide, not God is the means and world is the end. It is a wrong approach. World is the means and God is the end, right? We have reversed the means and end, right? So, we use the eternal as the means for getting the non-eternal, right? Whereas this intelligent person uses the non-eternal as the means for the eternal goal, right? Therefore, such spiritual seekers are indeed rare, right? Like the Gita students. Manushyanam sahasreshu. Among thousands of materialistic people lost in consumerist pursuits, there are only very few people who are spending time for Gita studies. As Swamiji says, taking time out, right, weekly 1 hour for this and then spending time thinking about it on a consistent and sustained basis, because the entire study of Gita does take time and we are only doing 1 hour a week, right? This itself is a very, very rare thing, right? Manushyanam sahasreshu, right? Says among thousand only one, right? Kashchit yatati, right? Siddhaye, one in thousand alone work for greatest accomplishment, Bhagavan as my goal, right? What will give you the strength to face, right, old age and worry is actually only this particular goal. And in repeatedly in Baba Govindam, Shankaracharya dwells on this fact in a very, very beautiful set of shlokas. And then he specifically mentions the importance of scriptural study, and he mentions Gita study in particular. Bhagavad Gita, Kinchita Adita. At least a little bit. If you cannot attend all the 18 chapters, does not matter. That's why I keep telling people, it is not that you have to join only in the first chapter and attend till 18 chapters. If there are three friends who want to join in, please ask them to join in. It doesn't matter at all. At any stage you can join in and you can always complete it later. Right? Bhagavad Gita, Kinchit Adita. It's said in Shankaracharya in Bhaja Govindam. Right? Even Kinchit, right? If you study, then Kashchit Yatati Siddhaye. And very few pursue moksha, yatatamati siddhanam, even among those spiritual seekers who strive, all of them do not succeed. Basically in the first attempt, like, any exam, you write multiple attempts, right? So, very, very important. Here we are referring to multiple janmas in case they are not able to fulfill in the first janma, right? So, yatatamati siddhanam. Here the word siddhanam means sadhakanam, among many seekers, kashchin mam vetti, only very few know me and reach me. Such a wonderful, rare teaching it is, Arjuna. May you listen to this teaching carefully, right? So that's the meaning of this verse. Among thousands of human beings, a rare one strives for liberation. Even among those seekers who strive, a rare one knows me in reality. Continuing.
Bhumirapo nalo vayuho, Bhumirapo nalo vayuho, Khammano buddhi revacha, Khammano buddhi revacha, Ahamkarayitiyamme, Bhinna prakriti rashtadha, Bhinna prakriti rashtadha.
Lord Krishna defines God or Ishvara in these shlokas beginning from the 4th up to the 7th shloka. It's a very important topic extracted from the Upanishad. We should remember that the entire Bhagavad Gita is a teaching extracted from the Upanishad, and therefore, only whenever we have any vagueness in understanding, right, for clarity, we go to Upanishads only, right? So, when Adi Shankaracharya comments on the Gita, he closely compares the Gita with the Upanishadic teaching. Upanishads, which are part of the Vedas, have existed long before Bhagavad Gita, right? We saw that in Introduction to Vedanta, right? So, that's why in the Dhyana Shloka, what do we say? Sarvota Nishado Gavo Dub. Sarvota Nishado Gavo right? And then we say that called Gita is the, we compare Gita to the milk, right, which is extracted, and we compare the Upanishad to the cow. So the Upanishad being the cow and Gita being the milk extracted from the Upanishad, right, we compare that. Therefore, all these messages are not freshly coming from Lord Krishna, very important point, Lord Krishna borrows them from the Upanishad. So what is the definition of Ishvara given in the Gita and borrowed from the Upanishad? That definition is an important definition one should remember. Ishvaraha Jagat Karanam. Right? Ishvaraha Jagat Karanam. Ishvaraha means God or Bhagavan. We are not referring to any Shiva or Vishnu, but we are talking about the original God in general. He is the Jagat Karanam, the cause or source of the entire universe. Ishvara is the cause of the origin of the entire universe. He is also the creator of time and space. Right? Whenever we say creation, we include even time and space. In Dakshinamurti Stotram, you can actually see this reference. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vaichitya chitri kritam. A whole universe along with time and space originated from God. Therefore, the definition of Ishvara is Jagat Karanam. This is the definition given in the Upanishad, in the well-known Taittiriya Upanishad, third chapter as well, right? But the definition of Ishvara, right? It talks about Yatova imani bhutani jayante Ena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhi samdishanti tad vijignyasasya tad brahmeti. Taittiriya Upanishad 313, Bhrigavalli. Seek to know that from which indeed these beings are born, by which they are born, live, and unto which they go back while resolving. Right? So, therefore, we should note certain points discussed in the Upanishad. And after discussing those points, we will get back into this shloka, right? It is very important to get some of the key concepts clarified before we get back into this shloka. Right? So, first concept is, as I said, Ishvara is Jagat Karanam. Not only he is the cause of the origination and sustenance, but ultimately Ishvara is the resolution ground in whom the whole creation or the universe dissolves, like the wave rising from the ocean. Right? Waves existing in the ocean and waves resolving in the ocean. When we say Ishvara is Karanam, we say Shishti Sthiti Laya Karanam. Very important definitions. Please try and remember them and you can keep it in memory. Jagat Karanam first and then Srishti Sthiti Laya Karanam. Right? Origination, maintenance and the resolution itself of the world. Right? Now next we expand this. We expand it a little more. When we use the word Karanam, we have to understand something based on our own experience in this creation. When a particular object is created, like an ornament, or a desk, or a cloth, right? We do talk about the cost. Now, there are two types of costs required for these products, right? If the ornament has to come, we need an intelligent goldsmith, right, who can design and has the skill of producing the ornament. So the intelligent conscious principle, either in the form of a carpenter or in the form of a weaver or in the form of a goldsmith, an intelligent principle is required. Conscious principle is required, the intelligent principle. The second thing is what? The material, right? The second thing that we need is the raw material out of which the product is made. What does carpenter require? Wood. Goldsmith requires gold. Weaver requires a thread of cotton, right? So, for producing gold ornaments, a goldsmith is required. and gold is also required, right? A maker and the material, both of them are essential. Maker without material cannot produce. Material without maker cannot produce. Otherwise, just imagine, if you just keep some wooden logs and just tomorrow morning you come, they can become a furniture. You need a carpenter to convert the wooden logs into a furniture. Just like you need a goldsmith to convert the gold biscuits into rings, bangles, etc. Right? Now, both causes are equally important. In Sanskritam, we call them nimitta karanam for the maker and upadana karanam for the material. Again, two more terms that you definitely need to remember. That is why I put them all as bullet points here. You can keep a printout of these. So first we saw jagat karanam, then we saw srishti, sthiti, laya karanam. Then we are seeing intelligent cause and material cause, nimitta karanam and upadana karanam, material cause, right? Nimittancha upadanancha. Naturally our intellect will ask, if the whole creation or cosmos is created and if God is jagat karanam, tell me, is God the intelligent cause or material cause? If you say God is intelligent cause, the question will come, what is the material cause? Even Akasha itself has been created, right? When we say space has been created, the question will come, what is the raw material out of which the space has come, right? So the mind-boggling questions will start coming. Now, if God is nimitta karanam, what is the upadana karanam will be the question. If God is upadana karanam, what is the nimitta karanam will be the question. So, how do we tackle this issue? For that, the Upanishad gives an answer. Right? So, generally, nimitta karanam and upadana karanam are two different entities. Like what? Carpenter and wood. Goldsmith and gold. Right? General rule is nimitta karanam and upadana karanam are distinct. Right? Whereas, there are situations, extraordinary and rare situations, where you find one karanam itself plays the double role of nimitta and upadanam. So, what is that rare example? Mundaka Upanishad talks about this rare example. What a wonderful Upanishad talking about this so many centuries, decades, years, thousands of years back, right? Rare example, and that is spider creating the web, the silk thread. Then there is a spider on the ceiling, and suppose once in a way we are cleaning, right? Then we see that when you push the spider from the ceiling, it will fall down, but never touch the ground. Then you wonder and see what has happened, it is hanging on this thread. From where did this thread come? The spider creates this extraordinary silk. It is called spider's silk, which is so extraordinary that research is going on the composition of that thread and the uniqueness of that thread, right? Now, to create that silk, from where did the spider find the raw material? The spider does not go anywhere. It finds the material within itself, right? You may call it from its stomach or mouth. I don't know the details, right? But it is from within itself. Spider does not have the time to search for raw material. You are pushing it. Instantaneously, it gets the thread and it extends also. 1 feet to 4 feet from the ceiling, right? It comes down. And then it's waiting for you to go away. Suppose you touch the hanging spider, what happens? It will go up. What happens to the thread when it goes up? It goes into itself. Right? That the spider is srishti sthiti laya karanam. Not only it is srishti sthiti laya karanam, it is nimitta upadana karanam. So if an ordinary spider can be nimitta upadana karanam and srishti sthiti laya karanam, Upanishad says our Bhagavan Ishvara also is one single nimitta upadana srishti sthiti laya karanam. Right? So, first karanam we said, and then now we have added 5 different adjectives to it, okay? Nimitta, upadana, shishti, sthiti, laya, karanam. Not one thread Ishvara is nimitta, உபாதான சிருஷ்டி ஸ்திதி லய காரணம் of the entire cosmos, not just one, but the entire cosmos including millions of galaxies along with time and space, right? Mundaka mantra goes like yator nina, we will see it later, maybe when some occasion comes I will bring that also up. So Ishvara is jagat nimitta upadana shishti sthiti laya karanam. This is lesson one. Okay. So in the next question the Upanishad takes up is, what is the nature of this Ishvara? Right? Ishvara, in whom time, space, galaxies, everything is originating. Right? Modern cosmology is talking about parallel universes. Right? You know that you can actually belong to one universe and there can be so many other galaxies and so many other universes, and there are parallel universes, and they say 10 to the power of 500 universes you can have, right? Such a possibility, right? In modern theory of cosmology, right? So Shastra Akhilanda Koti Brahmanda Nayaka Vise, right? So if Bhagavan is such a mind-boggling cause, what is the nature of the Bhagavan? So, the Upanishad declares, right, that Bhagavan consists of two parts, right, generally symbolized in our scriptures as what? Ardhanarishvara, right? So, Bhagavan has Amshadvayam or Bhagadvayam, two components. Lord Krishna uses the word Purusha and Prakriti in the 13th chapter, right? They are synonyms with Brahman and Maya. In the 7th chapter, Lord Krishna is going to use a slightly different expression, para prakriti and apara prakriti. Para, apara, prakriti, component mixture is Ishvara. Then the next question is, what do you mean by Brahman and Maya? Purusha and prakriti, para and apara prakriti. So Upanishad declares, Brahman is of the nature of pure consciousness principle, which we studied in the second chapter. What are the five features of consciousness? Can we quickly recollect? Consciousness is not a part, product or property of the body. Consciousness is an independent entity or principle which pervades and enlivens the body. Consciousness is not limited by the boundaries of the body. Consciousness it exists when the body is dissolved. The surviving consciousness is not accessible to anyone because there is no medium available for access and not because it is not there, right? So the five-featured consciousness is called Brahman, right? Atma, Purusha or Para Prakriti, all the four words are synonyms, right? Brahman, Atma, Purusha, Parapakriti, right? And consciousness. This consciousness is one part of Ishvara. The second part, which is called Maya or Prakriti, right? Or it is also called Apara Prakriti. Maya is defined as the most fundamental, rudimentary form in the scriptures. Modern science has talked about atom, right? So, the fundamental form of everything, right, most rudimentary, the potential form is Maya, right? Even, for instance, energy is a fundamental form, is what scientists have come to, right? They call energy field as fundamental form. Our scriptures go still deeper and they say that beyond that, still more fundamental, right? Even before all the energies manifested, right? In the most rudimentary form, we have Maya, Prakriti, right? Maya later on manifests as energy. So we will use the word matter in English to represent Maya. Though it is not exactly right, but we will refer to it as matter. Preferably we will use the word Maya most of the time. So what are the two components of Ishvara? Consciousness principle and matter principle. Put together is Ishvara. Then the next natural question will be, what are the similarities and dissimilarities between these two. In Tarka Shastra, whenever they want to understand things clearly, they use a method of study called similarities and dissimilarities, right? Sadharmya, Vaidharmya, Vichara, right? In English, basically compare and contrast, right? So, in Tarka Shastra, Sadharmyam means similarity. So, and then Vaidharmyam means dissimilarity, right? So, first let us understand what are the similarities between Brahman and Maya. So, consciousness and matter, both of them together are karanam, that is the common feature, parental status. You have a mother and a father, both are parents, right? So, parental status is there for both, right? In the 14th chapter, Lord Krishna compares consciousness to father and matter to mother, right? So, Lord Krishna does this in the 14th chapter, right? So, both of them are cause. What is the second similarity? Both of them are cause of everything that is produced, but they themselves are not a product, right? They are the cause of all the product, but they themselves, that is the fundamental consciousness and matter, they are not products by themselves. They are cause without being an effect. Normally in the world, any cause you study is an effect also. If you take your parents, they are children of their parents, right? So, any cause would have been an effect, right, at some time. But these are, Maya and Brahman are cause, but not having been an effect. So, it is a causeless cause, right? The second one is, because they are causeless cause, they are both anadi, unproduced, beginningless. For Krishna will repeatedly use the word, I am anadi. Therefore, Brahman is also anadi, Maya is also anadi, consciousness, Brahman, right? Which is fundamental matter and fundamental consciousness, both are beginningless, right? So, therefore, in Shastra, we don't ask how did they come, because they are anadi, right? So, in modern science, also we say matter can never be created and matter can never be destroyed, right? Therefore, creation and destruction don't exist. They are means of transformation only. Transformation alone is there. So, the second common feature is anadi, right? From this God, the entire creation evolved along with Kala. That's why we say that before Big Bang took place, right? The scientists say, right? You cannot even talk of time and space, right? So, we think time and space are there eternally, and in eternal time, space creation arrived. That is classical physics. In modern physics, it is not time and space that was eternally there. Creation came in time. Time and space are integral part of the cosmos itself, right? Time and space itself manifested. That is why Big Bang, modern science cannot talk about time, space, etc. They call it singularity, right? Now, singularity is basically a state of no information. Vedanta said Maya cannot be explained. Modern science also said it is a point of no information, right? So, the creation with time and space evolved. How did it evolve? Taittiriya Upanishad described this. Tasmadva etasmad atmana akasha sambhutaha first stage arise akashad vayuhu vayor agnihi agne apaha adhya prithvi prithya oshadayaha oshadibhyo annam annat purushaha. So thereafter from akasha vayu came, then agni came, then jalam came, then prithvi came, and they all combined together and all the lokas, our bodies, etc. came. Now, from prithvi oshadaya, that is the herbs, and then from the herbs, basically all the food, and from food, purusha. Basically, this whole cycle is described in detail in, Chandogya Upanishad. There's a whole lot of discussion on how this entire process happens, right? Of how finally it gets into the womb of the mother, right? The physical body, womb of any mother, right? So all of them are located in Akasha and everything is located in Akasha and Akasha is born out of Brahman, right? Akasha means space, right? So now we see the Vaidharmyam, right? Equally important fundamental differences what between consciousness and matter, right? So the first thing is we will see that consciousness is Chetanam and matter is Jadam, right? That is the first one, right? But there are other differences also. First is matter is subject to change, right? Whereas consciousness is not subject to change. Anyway, I think we have some more details to get into, and since this is a very, very important concept, I will stop here because the time is up and I will continue the concept, and I may be required to continue with concept some part of the next class also, but after we look at the next shloka.
पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः Let me just check if anybody has questions. You can raise your hands if you have any questions. Okay, today quality of sound was not that good compared to previous sessions. Can others also please let me know if it was bad, because then, you know, I can see what I need to do about it. Right? If others had problem, Achya says so. Can you please confirm if the quality of sound was okay, because otherwise I have to do something about it. Yes, audio quality was poor today. Yes, we had a problem. Okay. Just give me half a second. Let me just check this. Okay. I don't think there is a network issue. Okay. Anybody has any hands raised? One second. Okay. Oh, there's an equal number of people saying the audio quality was good and some saying it was bad. Okay. Okay. Anyway, there's one question here. Can we visualize the consciousness? You don't even have to visualize the consciousness. You need to discern the consciousness, as we say. Because it is very, very subtle. What is required is for us to discern. And how do we do that? For that, Upasana Yoga is actually a stepping stone. Because Saguna Brahma Upasana or Ishvara Upasana, we need first to develop our focus and concentration. Once we have that, then we talk about going on to Nididhyasanam, and in Nididhyasanam you will start focusing on the witness consciousness behind the Stula, Sukshma and Karana Shariram. So in Omkara, the silence that follows, the Anum, the silence is equated to the witness consciousness behind the Stula, Sukshma, Karana Shariram. So, first, if we are able to focus on the form-based God, Saguna Brahma, Saguna Ishvara Upasana, and then move on to Nididhyasanam, and then we are able to discern this consciousness, we can definitely discern consciousness and also claim that the all-pervading consciousness and the consciousness blessing my body are the same, soham bhavana can set in. Right? So I hope I have answered Ambili Ramachandran. Okay. Okay, I think there are no more questions. I think there were a lot of new concepts introduced today. If possible, may I request you all to revise the portion on creation in Introduction to Vedanta before the next class. Hari Om. We'll meet next Sunday.